That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, it's Rachel Bitticoffer Day on the podcast again, but first, I have a request for you. I need you to open your internet browser right now and type in patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. Unless you're in your car, obviously don't open an internet browser while you're driving your car. But once you're there, choose to either follow the show for free or better yet, subscribe for as little as $1 a month. Why? Well, because this show is powered by our Patreon page. We can't do the podcast without the immense support of our Patreon community. So why not join that exclusive club? It's the hub for this show where our most loyal listeners hang out. And by the way, where subscribers get all kinds of bonus content as well. So join us, why don't you? Patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. And now let the cartoons begin.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Shit's getting way too complicated for me.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, March 20, 2024, and this is the Bob Seska Interview on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 1,156 of the Biden-Harris administration, 230 days until the 24th presidential election. You can find me on Threads and Instagram at TheBobSeska, Blue Sky Bob Seska, Twitter BobSeska_go, and our Patreon page is BobSeskaShow.com. So, as I said, it's Rachel Bitticoffer Day again on the show. Whenever I need to know exactly how an election year is taking shape, I got to talk to Rachel. She's a master political strategist, a regular guest on this podcast, and she's the author of the book, Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. I got a link in the description at BobSeska.com for that. Today, we talked about Trump's bloodbath threat, Trump's weaknesses as a candidate, and how the Biden campaign is doing so far. Plus, what's going on in states like Ohio, Iowa, Montana, North Carolina, and more. So stick around. Meantime, don't forget to support this podcast by subscribing to us on Patreon, BobSeskaShow.com. Okay, hang on tight. Here comes the great Rachel Bitticoffer.
More fun, more music, the Bob Seska Show.
You know I'm guess I kinda love you. You know the freedom and the truth. Talking all night long.
Yo!
Oh, there she is. Hello.
I knew that was gonna give me an opportunity to pretend to be the voice of heaven.
For a second, I was like, is that heaven or is that Rachel Bitticoffer? I can't tell anymore.
Bob, this is God calling.
So how you doing? How are your kids feeling? Stomach flu in the Bitticoffer household.
It was a 24-hour puking flu. Haven't you ever had one of those when you were a kid?
Yes, of course.
So you're all better 24 hours later, but it's a terrible 24.
Right. And you didn't get it, though. It didn't transfer
over
you.
My incubation time period, according to the internet, is about 48 hours. So I'm kind of coming out of it.
And none of Trump's rally induced any vomiting over the weekend,
no.
Did it? Okay, all right. Because sometimes you can mistake those two things. A Trump rally, stomach flu, these things similar experiences, right?
Yeah, that's why we need the media to show that shit.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm so with you on that. But before we dig into Donald Trump and all that stuff, I want you to tell me about the Ryan Bussey event in Montana. Ryan Bussey, I had him on the show not too long ago, and this was before he was running. Tell me about his campaign. Are you affiliated with that campaign, or are you just helping out?
So, the Bussey campaign is for the Montana governor's race. Montana's currently got a MAGA extremist governor. This guy named Greg Gianforte, who mm-hmm. your listeners might remember from such episodes as punching a journalist in the Capitol Rotunda of Montana State.
Oh, God, yeah, right.
Right, and making national headlines. And that was when he was a congressman or whatever, mm-hmm. but now he's the governor.
Yeah.
So, you know, so yeah, this is a great campaign. I'm super excited about it. Ryan Bussey is a force to be reckoned with. He's got an incredible running mate. He run a tag team ticket up there in Raph Graybill. And you know, the two of them are just absolutely dynamic. I think they've really made believers out of the rest of the Montana Democratic Party and, you know, the people supporting John Tester's reelection campaign by, you know, just demonstrating how innovative on the stump they've been. And I can definitely see Montana being competitive flip.
Yeah. And it seems like Ryan's got that secret sauce that could actually work in a state like Montana. And it's the same thing. John Tester has the same ability where he's a Democrat who works in Montana because he feels like one of them. Right. Is that the selling point?
Yeah, Tester is a farmer, right? I mean, that's his, like, Tester and Sherrod Brown both have good brands. They're not quite as NASA astronaut as Mark Kelly's brand in Arizona is because being a NASA astronaut is something extraordinary, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of Tester, he's famous as a farmer. He's got a working farm. He's the only working farmer in the Senate. And he is Montana. I mean, I was actually behind him by accident on a, you know, flat escalator at the airport heading into Helena for that event. And I thought, that looks like, that guy's huge. That guy looks like John. Oh, wait, he's got a buzz cut. And then I saw a folded brown jacket in his hands, and I knew it was John Tester. But I was getting ready to do a concert on sale, 10 o'clock Ticketmaster release. So I had to go focus on that, Bob, because I needed some tickets to go to Red Rocks.
Right,
July.
Priorities, right?
The great, it ended up being Tester. But my point is this. He looks like part of Montana, okay?
Yes.
But Ryan Bussey looks like part of Montana, too. It's a different part. It's the hunting, fishing, gun-owning, rugged individualist, you know, Montana. And it is absolutely, and you can't buy that kind of characteristic. You either have it in your candidate or you don't, but it is one of the factors that goes in line with my belief that between good strategy and quality candidate, that is really going to be a competitive race.
Yeah, and not only does Ryan Bussey have you in his corner, but he also has Batman in his corner, right? Michael Keaton was at that event, wasn't he?
He was, and it was really funny because I was laughing. I did a joint fundraiser together, so he did his thing, I did mine, and I had my own fans there to get books, to sign books. So they came and they did, you know, all of that. And I was thinking, this is the only room in all of America where people would be equally interested in talking to me as in talking to Batman.
Right. That's a great way to look at it, huh?
Yeah.
And you know, it's interesting, though, going back to John Tester and perhaps Ryan Bussey, depending on November, it seems like John Tester and you were mentioning Sherrod Brown over in Ohio, they're both able to get elected statewide as Democrats in spite of the fact that their states are by and large going to Trump and Trump adjacent MAGA sycophants, right? How is that actually work? How does that work, Rachel?
I mean, number one, Sherrod Brown. So here's what people should understand. If we ran Sherrod Brown today as a fresh guy and a non-incumbent in Ohio, be a much harder lift, okay?
Yeah.
Same thing with John Tester. So, like, they were graduated in. Joe Manchin in West Virginia will be the last Democrat to represent that state probably ever, okay? West Virginia is, like, pinnacle Republican red state. It's about 20% total college educated. To put that into perspective, a state like Virginia is, like, 50%, okay? Like, it is, like, MAGA dreamland. But Joe Manchin, being an old brand, was able to defy that partisan realignment. What we're going to be doing in Montana and Ohio, I see them as two different problems. Montana's kind of always been a red state. It's kind of trended a little blue with Tester and Steve Bullock, who was the former governor. They've gone back and forth. It's traditional rugged individualism, Western libertarianism style politics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's a different scenario up there. down in Ohio, what you have is an Appalachian, you know, Midwestern plain states realignment, education realignment that's really driving non college educated whites into the arms of the GOP, right? Mm-hmm. And Ohio is on, like, was Ohio and Iowa is like behind Ohio. Iowa was competitive just, you know, a few years ago. Democrats were competing statewide in Ohio, in Iowa. And Ohio's in the same boat. They have de-aligned in terms of like who the white working class is aligning with. The Democrats at one time were the party of rural white working class people, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so with Ohio, there's two different, I mean, so in other words, in Ohio, we have to roll back de-alignment more than we would in Montana to win. But I do think that if we go into these places in the Midwest, as I say in the book, Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game.
Yep.
As I explained there, what we need to be doing is going into these de-aligning states like Florida and Ohio and tell the story of what Republicans have done to their states, right? And if we do that, we can and also tell them what Democrats are doing, want to do, or trying to do in the face of Republican obstruction. We'll sell the party brand, rebuild that brand loyalty, or recapture some of that brand loyalty, but also enhance our own brand loyalty with our group, which is de-aligning from the Republican coalition, and that is educated, you know, even some college education voters. We have a lot more that we could be picking up, especially in the suburbs of cities like Cincinnati and Columbus, that we haven't successfully gone in and tapped into their angst about the direction the Republican Party has taken. And if we do that and we remind them what a shit show this party is now, and how radical it is. It's an extremist threat to them, their own family, their own social security. Then I am confident we can recapture some of these de-alignment voters and enhance the realignment on our own side in the process.
Where do you land on elevating Bernie Moreno in Ohio to be the...
I make the whole race about Bernie Moreno, dude.
Yeah, really? I mean, that's, so that's a wise choice to say, okay, we want the...
Yeah, Sherrod Brown's going to run around the state and do his shtick, and it's a good shtick. I mean, you know, I fight for working, whatever. That's fine, folks. But the paid advertising, the ad campaign, the direct mail, the digital ads, all of that needs to paint his opponent as a circus freak, MAGA extremist that's a threat to Ohio. And if they do that, combined with his brand stuff, you know, his Sherrod Brown style brand, they can win.
Yeah, and it seems like Sherrod Brown's a safe bet for Ohio. I get the sense that Ohioans feel as though this guy knows us.
I'm telling you, some of that is there because of the, like I said, Kelly, Tester, Brown, Manchin, who's leaving, okay? All had things that let them be protected from de-alignment. But Ohio, until Dobbs, was trending away, okay?
Yeah.
So I would not neglect the part about, and this is what Tim Ryan got so wrong, and his campaign, not him personally, got so wrong in their Ohio 22 strategy. They didn't make it at all about J.D. Vance. Nobody, many millions of people, thousands in Ohio walked in and voted R on the party heuristic for J.D. Vance. And when they did so, they were thinking low taxes, good for business, whatever, right? And we let that happen because we did not come in and spend big amounts of money to make sure they knew who J.D. Vance was.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, even though Trump has obviously won all of his primaries, except for Vermont, he didn't do nearly as well as Biden has done in all of these primaries. I mean, where the president finished in the 90s, Trump finished in the low 80s, by and large. Nikki Haley got 200,000 votes in Florida, even though she's not even running anymore. What do you think of all of this? Is this a decent bellwether for what we can expect in November, or all those Republicans going to come home eventually?
No, it's definitely on my list, right? Okay. So I have a list of indicators that I track both for my clients and for myself, for, you know, all the work I'm doing on democracy. And that's right on the list, okay? I mean, there's division in the Republican Party's electorate that I like to see.
Yeah.
And it's not a division that All the speculation about Gaza and all these, you know, protest footage of very, very liberal places with very liberal people, in them, right? There's no evidence of a divided electorate in the Democratic base. Okay, they're voting for Biden. Keep in mind, Biden's putting up those strong numbers, and he's losing people. Like I have a friend in Florida that registered as a Republican to vote for Nikki Haley in that primary, and today switched their registration back to Democrat. Okay,
wow.
So like Biden has lost, and there's not a lot of that, but there, because like all the people who pay attention to news and politics, again, very small segment of America's population. We're talking about 15% of us are news, you know, news informed type people.
Mm-hmm.
So not a lot of people doing what we call strategic voting like that, but there is some, and we've seen them on the stump. I've seen them anecdotally. And what they are, what that is doing is actually, it's actually hiding some of Biden's strength, right? Because these are people that would have showed up and voted for Biden in the Dem primary, but they're choosing to cast their ballots in the Republican primary.
Yeah.
That said, it also enhances the division on the Republican side, because you have people coming in who are not really Republicans, who are voting for Haley to send a message against Trump. So it's a little noisy still, but it's suggestive. And there's a lot of evidence in the exit polls that we see people who are saying, I will never vote for Donald Trump, that are, you know, honest Republican voters, right?
Yeah.
And so when I say we want to enhance our realignment amongst college-educated suburbanites, particularly white suburbanites, because when we say the suburbs, we don't mean white people anymore, folks. Unless I say white people, I'm talking about a mix of people in the suburbs.
Yeah.
But of that suburban vote, the white people in particular are the ones that are the most likely to vote for the other side, right? So we want to be hitting them hard on this stuff and making sure it's front of mind when they go into that ballot box in November.
So I'm really curious about the impact of the State of the Union a couple of weeks ago. I get a sense that since then, the polls have started to trend toward Joe Biden, the national polls, where and they're somewhat reputable polls in the mix there, too, where we're seeing Biden in the lead in maybe a half dozen polls at this point since the State of the Union. The trend seems to be moving in the right direction. Is this regular people who are not necessarily engaged in politics during, you know, non-election times? Is this them coming home? Is it them starting to realize, oh, God, it's going to be Trump again and we need to support Joe Biden? Or is it an impact of the State of the Union, or is it a combination of those things?
So let me explain something to you guys, to you, the audience that's listening to this. And I was just doing a show the other day. I don't remember what show it was, but the person, the host says, yeah, you know, and we're coming into the final stretch here on the 2024 cycle. And I'm like, whoa, buddy, stop. Okay. Scratch that, reverse it.
Yeah.
The 2024 presidential election cycle has not begun. Okay.
Wow.
As you just alluded to.
Yeah.
It is just very, very beginning starting to go. And that's because the electorate is now being told, yep, it's going to be Trump and Biden. And there's going to be this absorption of reality time. Okay. Mm-hmm. People will not, normal human beings do not pay attention to president. They don't know any of the things that have happened in that primary. They don't know, and they don't care.
Like, Jesus.
Our election has not begun, let alone has it come into the final stretch, or has it begun to end? And that is one of the reasons why, you know, myself, some other analysts, not all of them, obviously, the good analysts anyway, have been telling people, calm down about the polling. This polling is not reflective of what we're going to see in the summer and the fall of next year, because 90% of the intended target audience hasn't watched a political news story, a news show, read a New York Times article in 4 years. So it's, I can't stress enough, what we're seeing in that data post State of the Union, I think, is a function of two things. You hit on the first. People, some in the very tail, like end of that tuned out group, have started to pay some attention. Okay, so you're seeing the people stop expressing a wish for a different nominee in their, whether they vote for Biden or Trump, expression, right? Because some of that is wishful thinking, like I would like someone else, right? Now they know what they're going to have, and as long as Democrats do a good job of making sure that it's not the lesser of two evils here, okay?
Yeah.
Voldemort versus Harry Potter, right? The gulf is massive, right? And so as long as we make that gulf clear to the electorate, I am confident what we're going to see is continued poll strengthening for Biden as people begin to tune in. And certainly this last weekend, which produced the bloodbath narrative, and then that's coverage that actually permeated through to ABC's nightly news, to things like that, that even there's still the most tuned in people are watching stuff like that. But if you watch MSNBC, C-SPAN, or CNN, I want you to understand you are an informational freakazoid, okay? No one does that, okay? And so therefore, no one knows what you know, and our job is to make sure to recognize that fact and make sure that our tuned out friends hear one thing about this 24 election cycle, and that is Donald Trump is coming for you, for your family, for your money, for your bodily autonomy, right? And we have to make that case for them, because it's not like they're hearing all this terrible shit about Trump and not responding. It's that they don't hear it, okay?
Yeah.
And what we need really is the 21st century version of a pamphlet drop, right? And that's what I think about a lot in terms of my work this year. It's like, how can you execute essentially a pamphlet drop for the 21st century, because people are not going to opt into consuming this news and information. So we have to find a way to put it in front of them that they can't and don't avoid.
Right. And I'm so glad you brought up ABC World News tonight, which led with the bloodbath story on Sunday. And that was so important. And obviously there's a lot of debating over the context, obviously the context, the broader context of who Donald Trump is, what he represents, and all the things that he said in the past provide just as much context as talking about the auto industry. It's this, it's all context. And the context for Donald Trump saying there's going to be a bloodbath for the country if I lose. Well, I'm so glad that that got out. I'm so glad that is being reported in the mainstream news. It's one thing to be on MSNBC. It's another thing entirely to be on ABC World News tonight on Sunday.
So when I, when I do my ranting about the media, I could put an asterisk over every message I put out that says, not talking about MSNBC, okay? But that would dilute the effectiveness of my media outrage, right? So media means people, like something people might, there's still nobody watches ABC World News anymore, but still more people watch that by far, like five times more than would ever watch anything that came off of MSNBC. So it is absolutely critical that Trump's crazy Project 2025 Agenda 47 plans, which you can read right on his website in his own words, where he talks about stealing Harvard's endowment and setting up Trump academies and ending the Department of Education to force schools to stop doing woke indoctrination, okay, which means basically a MAGA takeover of the public school system. These things are intensely radical proposals. He's got a proposal to deport every illegal, quote unquote illegal, right?
Yeah.
And if he was to execute this, number one, he'd have to suspend the Constitution and federal statutory law on immigrant rights to do so. But number two, he would destroy the entire American economy. It would cause an economic recession, the likes of which we've not seen since the Great Depression, right?
Yep.
So, like, we really need the media to focus on Trump. And I know that we told them, I didn't, but you guys, many of you said, stop talking about Trump all the time. But now we need them to cover Trump.
Yeah.
We need them to put this craziness on ABC Nightly News, on The View, on shit that people might watch, because no one watches hard news like we nerds that love politics do.
Okay, short break. Back with more Rachel Bitticoffer right after this.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, it's Randy Rhodes, and here's what you missed. There's about 1,000 billionaires in this country, and they're all saying, no, not to Trump. He's so stupid and so self-serving that no billionaire even wants to give him the money to put up a bond. Now, that's saying something about the level of narcissism that they actually understand is true about Donald Trump. If you offered the Koch brothers, I know there's only one of them, the other one's dead, but if you offered like Americans for Prosperity or ALEC or Heritage Foundation a chance to literally own a president who would deregulate everything to the point where they could dump their garbage on your front porch in your gated community and there wasn't jack crap you could do about it. If they thought that he was reliable, they would do it. They would give him the money. There's no question that they would put up $500 million for a bond because they got that kind of cash. Don't have time to listen to the live show? Want to hear more on your schedule? Go to randyrhodes.com and buy a stinking podcast.
There is exciting news in Stephanie Miller podcast land, isn't there, Chris? We now offer Stephanie Miller's Happy Hour podcast and the Out of the Gate podcast.
Stephanie Miller's Happy Hour podcast is once a week. It is the best interviews of the week from the Stephanie Miller Show every Friday. Stephanie Miller Out of the Gate is daily. You will get the first segment of every day's Stephanie Miller Show, plus Stephanie Miller's Happy Hour Extra, which is the best interview of each day. So three different podcasts in one feed.
Get it wherever you get your podcasts.
Subscribe on your favorite podcast app.
Bob Seska. All-time favorites all day long.
The thing that I keep thinking about, Rachel, is, and this is a frame that doesn't get discussed a whole lot regarding what you were discussing with regard to, Donald Trump's blitzkrieg across the United States to round up alleged undocumented workers, migrants, and so forth. And you also said earlier, you were talking about how Donald Trump is coming for you. That needs to be the message. Well, that's actually super realistic. And I'll tell you why. Because heaven forbid, if you have the same name as someone who is accused of being a migrant worker, it's very easy. It's going to be so easy for Donald Trump to end up picking up all kinds of American citizens in the process of this.
It's going to be a civil liberty nightmare. And that's why he talks about how he's going to do it. He's going to nationalize the National Guards of the red states and send them into the blue states.
Yeah.
He says this publicly. So that's how we know it's true, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you look similar, if there's some sort of similarity between you and someone who's accused of being an undocumented worker or a migrant or what have you, I can't even imagine. I mean, the civil liberties crisis is the perfect way to describe that, Rachel, because there are going to be countless American citizens who are disappeared in this process. And maybe that's what he wants. I mean,
it is ultimately what they want. Right. So like, it's not a flaw. Mm-hmm. It's by design.
Yeah.
Right? Now they're going to go for the low hanging fruit first, but they will get to the dreamers, folks. Okay. Like, and think about how horrible this is. We told the dreamers, go register with the government so that you can have protected status. There's a database with these people in it that Trump will control, man, that they signed up willingly because they trusted us.
Yeah.
They put, right?
Oh God, like, I hadn't even, you know what?
Allow this to happen, right?
I hadn't even thought of that. That is terrifying.
It is terrifying. And you know what, Bob, I don't know if you saw this, but on Sean Hannity's show a couple months ago, live. Okay. He had one of these MAGA patriot militia nuts filming in New York City as they were hunting illegal migrants. Okay. In the middle of the interview, this guy's like, oh yeah, we got one right here actually right now. And a camera pans to a couple of these Nazi thugs holding down this Latino guy, okay? Because they think they've caught a migrant, and the dude was just a guy, just an American guy shopping, and he gets attacked by this militia and taken down on live TV, dude. I mean,
that was the Hell's Angels guy.
To the Latinos of Houston, of Dallas, of El Paso, of Phoenix, of Tucson, of, you know what I mean? Just think about the human catastrophe that would be.
Mm-hmm. And then I saw a Fox, I think it was a Fox News thing, where one of the reporters found a little plastic baggie in the grass and said, well, this is obviously migrant drug paraphernalia. Well, how can you distinguish that? Is there a label? That indicates to me that this is just going to be completely indiscriminate. And I hope the word gets out, especially in the Latino community, that Donald Trump's Gestapo is just going to round up everybody. It doesn't matter whether you're actually a migrant or not. If you have a similar name, if you look similar, if you're just Latino, I mean, you are in danger of being disappeared, deported, et cetera, loaded into train cars. God only knows how they're going to operate this in terms of infrastructure, but it's going to be a goddamn nightmare. And there's going to be no one to stop Trump this time.
It'll be too late. Yep. We cannot stop it once it starts, folks. The only chance we have to stop this future from materializing is to do everything within our own individual abilities to make sure that Joe Biden wins the presidency in 2024.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's too late. Once they take power, we're not going to be able to roll back any of this stuff. Mm. And once they start rounding up Latinos, think about what that means for trans people, for gay people. You know, they have ambitious plans to reshape the culture of America, much in the way the Nazis did. So, like, you know, you can focus on what they did in terms of taking over the government. They did that to establish the Third Reich. But the Third Reich was also about stealing and appropriating and ending modern popular culture and reconstituting it into the image that the Nazis, here in this case, it's MAGA, prefers, right? Like, we are in the cusp of looking at some really incredible stuff. And so I am trying very hard as an outsider to Latino activists. You know, I don't do Latino politics, but I am definitely urging and working, you know, in my capacity to get a hold of them and say, you cannot assume your voters, Latino voters, are no different than other voters. Nobody knows anything about what's happening. Nobody reads the news. It's not because they're Latinos. It's because they're Americans. This is a country that is civically starved itself on purpose to the point of atrophy, of death, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And Latinos are no different. So they do not know that Donald Trump has an Agenda 47 plan that's going to put their communities into situations of terror, of missing relatives, of all kinds of things are going to befall anyone that looks migrant to one of these MAGA nuts, okay?
Yeah.
And so we have to make sure we have to do massive Latino outreach this cycle, but we need to tell them one important thing, not 10,000 different dialect specific things. One thing, the Republican Party is coming for you.
Yeah. And it's accurate. It has the benefit of being accurate too. It's not. It's not paranoia. Yes. It's documented. This is what
it's
the
right
plan
there
is.
On his website. My God, just show him what he says. He's on video. You know, right?
So
we don't have to make things up, Bob. I mean, that's the thing. Is like, you know, I'm not telling anybody to make things up. What I'm telling you is the crazy stuff that keeps you up at night because you're so afraid of this election. Average people don't know any of it. And so our job is to make sure they find out something about it. Yeah.
Is there really a realignment happening where Hispanic and Black voters are moving toward the Republican Party? Feels like a myth to me, Rachel.
It's not a myth. It's an educational realignment. That's why I hate when non-political scientists try to do political science without any political science and usually use economics, right? And then they'll find something like, oh, look, judges make ideological decisions within the constraints of the law and be like, yeah, that what came out first time in poli-sci literature in 1980, dude, okay? So anyway, the point is this, Bob. Yes, there's a realignment going on. It's been going on for a long time. It's an educational realignment. The suburban white college-educated voter used to be the thing that guaranteed Republican victories every cycle. Okay.
Yeah.
And now that's eroded. They've certainly lost all the diverse people in the suburbs because the suburbs have changed in 40 years to not just be white strongholds, but they're also degrading down in that suburban white Republican historic vote that they've always counted on. And where they're benefiting, unfortunately, with minorities is their outreach to these communities. They are going to talk to Latino voters, and they are going to tell Latino voters one message. You're not going to worry about all this micro-targeted bullshit. They're going to hit them with one message. The Democrats are crazy socialists. They want to end democracy. They want to turn your boys into girls, whatever, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be fear about us, and we must counter that message by making sure Latinos see what Donald Trump is saying about them and what he is talking openly about doing to them.
You know what? I want to move over to North Carolina and talk about that particular state, because I'm observing North Carolina very closely, especially after the primary there. I think, Rachel, it's a toss-up state. I was talking to Simon Rosenberg last week. Chris Boozy is putting it squarely in the Biden column. I wouldn't go necessarily that far. But what do you think? And are you seeing any other surprises on the horizon for November?
Yeah, no, North Carolina is definitely a toss-up state. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And, North Carolina particularly pisses me off because I just know we could be winning there if we'd have done a better strategy, if we would have made the strategic shift that I'm arguing for to negative partisanship strategy, we would already be winning there. I mean, they've done the governor's race, right? But here's why. Because you can't be winning in Georgia and then losing in North Carolina. If you can make that lift, because you have to blast so much vote out of Metro Atlanta to make Georgia swing, let alone swing all the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And North Carolina has had technically less less of a lift there, right? But they don't run good candidates. They don't run good strategy. They want to have this, Tim Ryan model of Ohio from 2022, where they're minimizing partisanship. The worst thing to do in your campaign strategy now is to minimize partisanship. And I explain why in the book. The whole front half is about getting people to understand elections are about partisanship, partisanship, and partisanship for 90% of the voters, okay?
Yeah.
So if you're not selling your party and your brand and shitting on the other party's brand, you're doing it wrong, because no matter how great your conversation with some dude at the door is, when he walks into the ballot, the data don't lie. That D and that R is going to dictate his vote choice unless he's 5, 10% of the electorate that truly swings, and their vote choice is dictated on narrative. Which party is more scary than the other one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes so much sense. Yeah.
We've gone into many of these campaigns where Republicans have been like, the Democrats are scary, and our campaign has been, meet Tim Ryan. Tim Ryan's not one of those Democrats. Tim Ryan doesn't want to defund the police. We run against ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we try to get them to buy a candidate separate from the brand. Bad idea, completely flawed based on what we know about political science fundamentals. And that's why I am convinced we can come into North Carolina. We can define North Carolina by Trump and that crazy nut job they just nominated as governor, who's honestly a Nazi sympathizer, right?
Right, right.
And you make the state, the people in that state, fearful of a national abortion ban, and having these people in control of their money, their livelihoods, their freedom. And I am convinced we can win North Carolina on that message.
I saw a poll this morning, Rachel, indicating that Mark Robinson, who's the lieutenant governor, Republican nominee for governor, is more objectionable than Donald Trump. In other words, Trump is doing slightly better against Biden than Robinson is doing against Stein. I wonder if that's the giant R word in the room. I wonder if that's racism against the Republican nominee in this case.
Yeah, it's probably name ID, to be honest with you.
Name ID.
Like a lot of times when people look at this and they're like, oh, look, Trump and Biden. And then like, look at this other thing. Well, you know, name ID is a big factor. And as I've talked about, 90% of people who will vote in this election have paid zero attention to any of the politics that we think has been, this election has been going on for months and years. They don't. Okay. Yeah. And they don't know who Mark Robinson is. I mean, if he's the lieutenant governor, did a lot of state polling of the statewides in Virginia. And I'm going to tell you, the governor gets about 70% name ID and it goes way down from there. Lieutenant Gov, 40, 50% of people would be able to offer an opinion on them. That's, you know, that's not well known. So a lot of times when pollsters report these head-to-head differentials, what you're seeing is a name ID effect and not a preference effect. So. Mm-hmm.
And so you tweeted earlier today, this is going back to Donald Trump here, that Trump's first big lie, being a billionaire, is crashing down around him. You said, not only can't he pay, now everyone knows he's broke. Yeah. So I seriously hope the Democrats link all of this to the fact that Trump wants to be the steward of the economy again. And also, and maybe this is even more important than the economic considerations here, that this is a major national security threat. Donald Trump carrying this much debt and being this heavily leveraged. So do you see anything on the horizon where the Democrats are going to start to link these two things? I mean, it's one thing to say, well, he's been adjudicated in this court of law and this other one and this other one. But it's another thing entirely to make that relatable in terms of how he's going to be president. Do you think that's going to be something that's going to happen?
Yeah. Let me put it this way. And I'm sure Simon would disagree, right? Because like his argument would be, well, let's just make sure people know that the Biden economy is actually better than the Trump economy. Because right now, you know, I watch these focus group footage, and focus groups are useless statistically, but, you know, you can still get something out of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people, they just saw one of three Latino voters in Maricopa County this morning where they reported that they, you know, who had a better economy, Biden or Trump? And they all said Trump, even though they're kind of leaning towards voting for Biden right now. Okay.
Yeah.
So like Simon's answer to that might be, well, we need to educate people and make sure they understand that the economy is better under Biden than it was under Trump. If they liked it under Trump, then they should really like it under Biden. And I get the impulse to that approach. But here's what I would tell you is actually what would be easier, convincing people that Biden's economy is as good or better than Trump's, or making sure people have a shitty view of Trump's handling of the economy.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it's B, right? It's easier to go fix the perception by napalming his handling of 2020. There's no way you can. So yes, they were right. Better off than you were 4 years ago might have worked good for them up until March 20th today of 2024. Because 4 years ago today, I was coming back on an empty airplane from the Bill Maher show to an empty DC and driving the freakiest drive home I've ever had on the I-95. There were no other humans on it. Okay.
Yep.
Right. So like now that better off 4 years ago story is an opportunity to remind people what they lived through with Donald Trump in 2020. It was a shit show. His economic mishandling of COVID with denying aid other than that one aid package for months and months. You know, the mixed messaging about dangerous when he's having secret conversations with Bob Woodward telling him this is so bad. We should eviscerate this man's economic record and remind people that how shitty he is and how much danger they're under in his leadership. And that is easier psychologically for voters than trying to convince them that they're wrong and actually Biden's economy is good.
Why on earth would they do that? Why on earth would they try to remind people what it was like 4 years ago? Are they counting on people forgetting or?
Yeah, well, they are counting on us not reminding people. They always count on our shitty strategy, Bob. I mean, that's why I got to make sure that in 2024, we run the whole map, state ledge, House, Senate, Gov, up to the presidency. And the presidency strategy is looking pretty good, okay? It's the rest of the bottom-up stuff that I got to make sure we have humming. And we need it all humming on this threat of Trump threat of MAGA extremism theme, painting Republicans as an extremist threat. Because if voters only know one thing, the swing bucket, that 10-5% that we need them to know this. The Republican Party is scary. Okay. Yeah. That's what we need them to know more than anything else. And every ad that we don't spend doing that is an ad that's not helping with that objective, right? So, yeah. Like, you know, it's very, very important that we do that.
Yeah, the first time I think I've ever disagreed with Lawrence O'Donnell that I can remember, I'm sure there are other occasions, but in recent memory is just the other night he was talking about not giving Donald Trump our fear. And I was like, well, you know, there is a lot to be, I mean, legitimately frightened of. I mean, anyone who lived through the first 4 years is going to be terrified just of the roller coaster, Rachel, just of the constant feeling of waking up every morning and thinking, my God, what's the disaster going to be today? That's terrifying in and of itself. And so I feel like you start there and God, the list of things to fear only gets longer. So there's nothing wrong with emphasizing that.
Encapsulates. I didn't hear what Lauren says. So I can't make a comment one way or the other on that.
Sure,
but
sure.
Here, it really encapsulates this though, right? Mm. Is like that you're waking up every day fearful because you know what's happening.
Yeah.
And we are headed potentially into some very dark days for the world, not just us. Okay. The whole world will suffer because we have a military regime that is 10, you have to take 10 countries, the next 10 countries, put their militaries together to equal ours. Okay. Like, we have a massive military that might fall under fascism. But here's the problem, folks. There's only about 10% of us in the world, in the country, informationally, that aren't on the other side because they have information. Late, you know, people who are very interested, but they all consume fake news and are in a mass psychosis. So you got to cut those people out. Mm. Think about the same people who know to wake up right now fearful. And that percentage is probably 10% of the electorate. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So the point is we have to take our fear and share it. We have to make sure everyone feels the way we do. If we were to achieve that, we could not lose in 2024. So that is what I would argue about our fear. It's great and dandy that we're afraid.
Yeah.
Now we got to make sure everyone knows what we know or something, not everything we know. It's too much, right?
Yeah.
But a couple of the things that we know that are the most scary and relevant to them so that they start waking up fearful. Because if we can accomplish that in time for the election day, then we will win.
One last thing I want to ask you, Rachel, before I let you go. How's the Biden campaign doing so far? I know that really the State of the Union was sort of the official or unofficial kickoff where now the machinery is now running at full speed. So give the Biden campaign a letter grade so far and any notes that you might have on things that they could perhaps do differently.
I think the Biden campaign is the least of my concerns for this cycle. They ran an excellent campaign in 2020.
Yeah.
They've only adapted better and better to negative partisanship strategy. I have absolutely no doubt that they're going to go out there and make the case to Americans that, you know, this is an existential moment. We're not living it through a normal time. This is not a normal election. And average people don't yet know that, Bob, as I keep trying to reiterate. So we got to make sure if we didn't have the Biden campaign pulling that theme, getting average people to know that would be basically impossible to do. So it's necessary, but it's not sufficient. Right? Obviously, we want them wedging the hell out of Roe. Roe is scary for across the voter file for women. Doesn't matter if you're a Latino woman, a Black woman, a white woman, an Asian woman. It doesn't matter if you're a gay woman, a straight woman, a rural woman, a suburban woman, a city woman. Nobody likes the government having control of their body and
right.
not and being left at the mercy of the law while you're suffering a medical emergency. Nobody likes that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we need to make sure all the women's know that, and I'm sure the Biden team has a great strategy for that. Where I'm concerned is that swing map. Like I said, I look at a state like North Carolina. If we're gonna flip it and save it from MAGA, what we need to do is run that messaging all the way up from the state legislative races they have to the House districts, if there are any that remain after the redistrict that Democrats will be running in competitively, up to that governor's race, And I don't think there's a Senate race this cycle in North Carolina, is there?
I don't know. That's a good question. So. Yeah, I'm not sure.
We just had two, so there's got to be a year off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in any case, like, that's what we need to be doing. And so for when you ask me, what am I worried about still here in March pending into the election, is making sure by summer I've reached as many of these campaigns as possible to encourage them to run this new strategy that works so good in 2022.
Is Dobbs going to continue to resonate this time around as
yes,
it has in
absolutely.
Special
it's the
elections?
Number one issue, dude.
Okay.
Women don't get over having your body stolen. In fact,
yeah.
as I said, the day that that happened, I mean, that week, if you go back to my Twitter, you're going to see a lot of prescient predictions that are, again, based on my trained expertise in poli-sci.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, listen, guys, this is a game changer. COVID didn't move public opinion at all, okay?
Yeah.
Ours was stagnant through that. I knew Dobbs was going to be a life-altering for the 2022 cycle. And honestly, the pivots that I was urging and other people are doing, I'm not the only person working in this area, wouldn't have been enough without that Dobbs repeal making Democrats feel fearful and offsetting the enthusiasm advantage Republicans had naturally by not being in the White House, okay?
Yeah.
So Dobbs wiped that enthusiasm deficit out. It has continued to wipe it out in every special election and cycle since Dobbs. And I am absolutely confident, especially where it's tapped into and exploited, that it is going to be the defining issue in all of these swing races, presidential, Senate, governor, and beyond.
Well, Rachel, you are the Jedi master with all of this shit. The book is called Hit 'Em Where It Hurts. It is out now. I've got a link in the description of bobsesca.com to buy it. So go click that link rapidly, buy a bunch of copies. Rachel, thank you so much for joining me again today.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We'll talk to you again real soon.
Okay, bye-bye. You know I'm Kiss a Canada. You know the freedom and the truth. Talking all night long of the universe and dreams and the times we're living in and the girls that we're seeing rocking heavily on the bed. Lost the Rizzlers on the bed. Those angels were like Gene Harlow. Road to Rough ain't easy. Came for love. Go ahead and live life.